them. Feel the rhyme. Get on up. It's pamphlet time.
Quack, quack, quack.
Hello and welcome to There Will Be Pod, a 32 Fans podcast where we discuss all things movies, past, present, and occasionally future. My name is Sammy Chester.
And I'm Will from America. Today we are going to be talking about martial arts sports movies. This is the last bracket of our sports movie tournament before next month's grand tourney, covering 64 movies across all sports.
Long awaited.
I mean, people have been asking me on the street for years, Will, when's that final sports bracket podcast going to happen?
It's happening now.
Finally coming. And we have a special co-host today, Nolan.
Hi, my name is Nolan Rossiter. I've been a patron since day one of 32 Fans.
Why martial arts movies? Why did you jump at the bit to join us for this episode?
I had to get in on one of these and I missed out on hockey and soccer, so I thought martial arts would be a perfect one. Growing up, I love watching some of these martial art movies that are just outrageous.
There's a lot of, I would say, 80s childhood favorites for those of us who grew up in the 80s. Before we jump into the martial arts movies, though, quickly give the number one movie in each sport episode we've done so far, just to give listeners a sense of some of our champions who all will be joining us in the 64 tournament next month. And those would be soccer, Damn United, hockey, Slapshot, golf, Caddyshack, tennis, Borg versus McEnroe, basketball, Love and Basketball, Brian Song from football, Major League and Baseball, Chariots of Fire from racing, The Wrestler representing Olympics / wrestling. And just last month, we finally covered boxing and Raging Bull came out as number one. Boxing was a great lead-in, though, to the very last sport we're covering, which is martial arts. To cover martial arts, though, we have a very special guest, Ben Johnson, editor of Kung Fu Movie Guide website and host of the likewise named Kung Fu Movie Guide podcast. Ben, thanks so much for joining There Will Be Pod. Are you also a Kung Fu practitioner? Do you limit yourself to the movies?
When I was very young, I did do martial arts. I did do Kung Fu as a kid, but you go to university and then you start drinking, going out. Girls get in the way. So my Kung Fu has slipped.
Let's rank the four of us in terms of our martial arts training and which martial art.
I started taking karate classes when I was 6 years old. I had to stop when I was 7 because I broke my arm riding a Razor scooter. That's about where my journey ends.
Formal training, the most I've done is, you know, boxing, basically. That's
boxing exactly. Is excluded from the martial arts. Okay, so
wrong bracket.
On ice hockey fighting, I guess that would be a form of martial arts, but that's about my extent of skill.
Will has the edge. Myself, though, I'm going to be even behind Nolan. I did none of them. And I always kind of wondered as a kid why. And I guess we'd have to get my parents on the pod once to ask them. Ben, how about you? It sounded like you may have the most then, right?
Yeah, I did it for, I would say, about 6-7 years. I was quite young when I started. I got up to...
Kung Fu.
Yeah.
So we already have a classic karate versus Kung Fu between you and Will in terms of your experience you're drawing off.
It's Karate Kid, right. The 80s one versus the Karate Kid from 2010.
I went to a few Wing Chun classes in college. I had never heard of Wing Chun when I started college and went to it. I hadn't seen some of these movies, obviously. In suburban America, karate was the mainstream martial art if you were a kid growing up. That was the one you would go to. I don't think Kung Fu is a suburban option.
Because I'm from quite a small town here in the UK and you had to hunt it out. It wasn't like, you know, an easy thing. There wasn't a Wing Chun school on every corner. I guess in America, there's a deeper connection to karate, the army vets bringing it back from Japan and setting up the dojos over there.
Ben, is it fair to say Wing Chun is one school within Kung Fu that arguably defines itself as sort of the legacy school, meaning kind of the core school? Because I think people don't necessarily know what Wing Chun means, but it does crop up in one of the movies.
Well, it's famous through the movies now because it was Bruce Lee's style and he learned it through Ip Man was Bruce Lee's teacher. And obviously you've got the Ip Man franchise, which now big deal. Donnie Yen, of course, stars in those movies, plays Ip Man very well. I mean, Wing Chun's one of many traditional Chinese Kung Fu styles.
You can almost say Wing Chun to mean Kung Fu. How did you become a Kung Fu movie fanatic?
First thing I remember seeing martial arts and thinking, whoa, that's really cool, was probably Dragon the Bruce Lee story. What's that, early 90s, 93 maybe? And I was certainly too young to watch that. just so captivating. I remember thinking that was actually Bruce Lee in the film. So then obviously seeing Dragon and being influenced by that, I then learned more about Bruce Lee. And then it was like, got to find a kung fu school.
The movies were the shorthand into
exactly.
the style.
Yes. But then I was just fascinated by the films and then Hong Kong cinema in general. And then that exposed this whole world of just mad Hong Kong movies from the 80s and 90s, which are still just spectacular. You watch them nowadays, they're still very much the high watermark, I would say, of what's capable in for action cinema.
One thing that Will Ove and I have all looked at in these sports movies is trying to understand, is there a unique DNA to this particular sport genre? So is there something about a martial arts sports movie that distinguishes it from the general tropes of a sport movie?
A repetitive theme was revenge. It was either the hero was trying to get revenge for something that had happened to them or to their family, or they were trying to, I guess it was their ego getting in their way, pride. With martial arts, it seems like a lot of it is honor. Whereas if you compare it to, you know, something like football, where football team lost and you got embarrassed by another team, so you come back and win the next year. It's not really the same thing as in a martial arts movie where family was dishonored because the enemy killed the hero's brother and or stole the hero's wife or something like that. So it seems like it's a lot more family-based than a lot of other sports movies.
A lot of that pride and honor are values that are derived from, you know, the millennia old development of martial arts in the East, in China and in Japan. And sort of that sort of then leaks into these movies. There's like a 30 year plus Hong Kong kung fu movie making legacy, which these movies are drawing off.
You can go back to the birth of cinema in China. Some of the earliest silent movies were all martial arts based. I mean, a lot of those movies aren't around anymore, unfortunately, but you can go on YouTube. There's a series called Red Heroine, which I'd recommend. Female swashbuckling kind of movie, but all of the tropes that you still see in a film like Crouching Tiger, where they're jumping around on the roof, you know, having these high-flying sword battles, that's there. It's all there in the 30s. One trope I would say about, I guess, the sporting motif and the elements around sort of confining martial arts to this tournament structure. The problem with the genre is the fact that there are guns in the world. So big conceit is how on earth can you get these people in these films to do this elaborate choreography, this amazing fight scenes and show off their moves when we live in a world where it's so easy to just pull out a gun and just shoot someone. A lot of these films use the tournament structure because it's the only realistic way that you can confine a story and a fight scene to a set of rules. Whether it's Enter the Dragon, The Quest, any of these movies, Bloodsport, they all have to confine to whatever the rules are in the ring.
Enter the Dragon we'll talk about soon. People compared it sort of to Dr. No, which had come out a few years before, and clearly it was trying to be sort of a kung fu Dr. No, but the difference from Dr. No is James Bond doesn't get to the island and partake in a sports tournament. The pushing a sports tournament into the center of the movie, as you said, it's clearly a structure. I would agree strongly with Nolan. I think revenge is the dominant theme. Revenge and honor are the dominant themes from kung fu writ large movies that I'm familiar with. Enter the Dragon, there still has to be one of the guys he fights killed his sister or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, there still has to be a revenge trope thrust into these movies. The reason why is because the dominant trope of martial arts full stop is revenge. So even when you've focused it within a tournament, that theme will still continue.
When compared to any other sort of sports movie, the theme in these martial arts sports movies seems to be more that your ability at this sport defines like your value as a person more than like a football movie typically. Well,
I think there is a strong legacy of three things as well. There's a really strong legacy of Rocky. I think a lot of these movies were in sort of the decade plus after Rocky, and they have that sort of strong script in mind. Second is video games. The arcades, I think, were so popular in the late 80s, early 90s that they literally were shaping the way that people created these movies. Even in Bloodsport, there's that scene early on where the two guys are bonding over a fighting video game.
Think you can give me some competition?
Sure, I'll try it.
That's what I like to hear. Kid who isn't afraid to lose. You ready?
Yeah.
You like this kind of fighting, huh?
Yeah.
You want to see some real fighting, you can see me fight at the Kumite.
I'm here too for the Kumite.
Aren't you a little young for full contact?
Aren't you a little old for video games?
Why they had them playing some sort of really bad video game. And then the final one is the decade of cheese. The 1980s is where a lot of these movies resided best. Even some of the movies that came out in the 90s have like an 80s aesthetic. And there's a cheesiness to some of these. To me, Van Damme's whole career, he's a quintessential 1980s action star. Let's jump to the bracket. Does that sound good?
Yeah, let's do it.
11 movie bracket. Ben is our lead judge. He's going to be joined by Will or Nolan. I will tiebreak when necessary. And as mentioned, we included only martial arts movies with a competitive sport element, had some notable omissions. What is the one movie did not make our 11 movie?
Oh God, there's so many. Flying the flag for the UK action star that is Scott Adkins, a friend of the show, been on our podcast 3 times now. He obviously famous for playing Boyka, famous Russian inmate that's part of Undisputed franchise. There's some really great fight scenes within the Undisputed franchise. If you're not familiar with the Undisputed franchise, I'm sure you are, then definitely they're great films and some great action.
Martial arts movies, particularly sporting ones, dominate late night cable. And I have seen Undisputed 3 and 4. Mm-hmm. I don't know when they came out, but I feel like they cropped up a lot on basic cable.
Kung Fu Panda 2 is a really egregious exclusion. Yeah.
Not enough cartoons in this bracket as a whole.
Seeing Ombak for the first time was just mind-blowing.
Ombak is a fantastic movie, but
really good.
I really wanted to include it, but it simply doesn't. It's a pure revenge story. Is there a great female-led martial arts sport movie that, talking about our great omissions, that we missed? Because we've had in every single sport until now at least one or two female-led for that given sport, whether it was racing, baseball, whatnot. But we failed that in this case.
Yeah, there's quite a few, actually. There's a few modern films that immediately spring to mind. The work of Amy Johnston, she's doing great work. She has done quite a bit of stunt doubling in the past in Marvel films for Scarlett Johansson. She is in a film called Lady Bloodfight. I would recommend that as a sort of all-female remake of Bloodsport, believe it or not. Zoe Bell is a great stunt coordinator. She does all the stunts for a lot of the later Tarantino films. So she's in a film called Raise, which springs to mind as a tournament fight movie. That's a sort of women in prison film where the guards sort of force the women to fight in this kind of twisted fight tournaments. Quite a violent film, but that's a very good showcase for Zoe Bell's talents. Definitely check out Cynthia Rothrock's work.
My omission is a movie that doesn't quite exist, but I would have loved to have seen a classic martial arts Jackie Chan versus Arnold Schwarzenegger. Maybe, oh so maybe, we will see that face off in the near future.
Well, there is a film that's coming out that has been made in which Jackie Chan and Arnie...
So that's what I'm referring to, yeah. You should check out the trailer because talk about it's, 80s cheese. It is so bad.
It's a Russian-Chinese co-production that's gone through so many different titles.
Some to the movies at hand, though. That's going to start with our number 2, Best of the Best, which is going against our number 11, Mortal Kombat. Ben and Nolan, who will be our judges here.
Round 1, fight.
Best of the Best came out in 1989. It's about America and Korea facing off in a Taekwondo karate event. It was never clear to me in the movie exactly which kind of martial arts they're supposed to be fighting, but putting that aside, it was produced and the lead star is Philip Rhee, who he says the movie is sort of based upon his story of representing the U.S. in a match against Korea. His brother, interesting, plays the bad guy that he has to fight off. And to my mind, the most interesting character in the movie is Sean Penn's brother, Chris, his late brother, unfortunately.
Where do you live, Kelly? I'm
about a drink away. She
hasn't combed her hair. That's a nice neighborhood. She takes
gin with the as far as you go, puke.
Oh, God, it took you till now to realize I was gone.
Go away, Bert.
Yeah, Bert, go away.
Hey! Shit, baby, I'm sorry.
Well, that's a good move, Bert. Don't take any lip from her. Keep in touch, fellas.
We're out of here.
I want him. I want his balls.
I thought you were missing a pair, asshole.
Hey, shut up, Travis. You're dead, pal.
Get him, Bert!
Maybe discuss why Chris is so interesting. And it's going against Mortal Kombat, which came out in 1995, 6 years later. Interestingly, the movie came out just 3 years after, I think, the game first hit arcades. The movie Mortal Kombat was directed by Paul Anderson. Not that Paul Anderson, but the other Paul Anderson. And it almost starred Cameron Diaz and had Steven Spielberg and had Van Damme. But all three of those people pulled out and decided not to be in the movie. So instead it has, frankly, I think a bunch of no-names. Philip Ree from Best of the Best wanted to be Liu Kang in Mortal Kombat, but he did not get cast.
I've got to admit to a very much a soft spot for Mortal Kombat. I think it gets quite a bad rep because it gets thrown into a lot of these 90s video game adaptations like Super Mario Brothers, which really wasn't very good, and Street Fighter, which was such a missed opportunity. It's hilarious, obviously, and to go back and watch Street Fighter, it's a ridiculous film. But if you're a fan of the game, you probably were disappointed that it wasn't as bloody and gory as the whole point of Mortal Kombat was that it was a pretty brutal video game.
Was that a box office decision? It's weird. The movie is just nowhere near as bloody as a game, which was... Any five-year-old could walk up, put a quarter, and play the game.
Yes, they do that. But having said that, I think the fight scenes in Mortal Kombat still hold up pretty strong. Robin Shu, who plays Liu Kang, obviously was a stuntman and an action actor in Hong Kong movies. Before that, this was obviously his big Hollywood debut, I guess. Cast of unknowns, interesting.
I thought I read that Van Damme was the inspiration for Johnny Cage to exist as a character in the video game. And therefore, to me, it was just sort of so bizarre that he wouldn't take the part in the movie when he inspired the character. That was the one role in the movie you had to cast an actually famous star. Is that accurate, that Van Damme was inspiration for Johnny Cage?
I'm not sure about that, but you can certainly draw parallels. I mean, Johnny Cage is supposed to be this sort of arrogant actor. And the criticism, particularly within the film, is that he doesn't really know the moves and he can't do it for real, which is something that Van Damme has been criticized of his whole career.
That's Van Damme, exactly, yeah.
So I don't know, maybe he read the script and was like, I'm not doing that. You know, Van Damme was hot property in the mid-90s. You know, he just come off doing Time Cop, getting paid sort of major money. So I don't know, it could have been a money thing.
And the press says, I don't know how to do this stuff.
Cut.
All right, people, reset. We're back in 15
minutes. I'm not doing it again.
No, what do you mean you're not doing
it
again?
I mean, I'm not doing
Johnny,
it again.
Johnny's the last shot of the picture. Where are you going?
I'm going to my trailer.
No, you can't leave
I'm
going
to get a gun. Then I'm going to shoot myself for being in your
kill
movie.
Me. People kill me. I'll be back directing traffic. Johnny, don't leave me hanging up here.
You're killing me, Johnny. I love you. I need you. Don't leave
Johnny.
Me here.
I see the press is still giving you a hard time.
Yeah, they think I'm a fake.
Johnny, you're one of the best martial artists in the world. And I can help you prove it.
Prove it? How?
The tournament, is held once a generation. The best fighters in the world are invited. You win the tournament, you win their respect. They'll tell the entire world that you're the real goods.
So, how do I,
There's a boat. It leaves Pier 40, Hong Kong, tomorrow. Be on it.
Christopher Lambert as well, playing Raiden, I think is quite good fun, from Highlander, obviously. And you've got that techno soundtrack. I mean, who doesn't enjoy...
Oh, the music.
Who doesn't enjoy that?
It's epic.
Kind of best of the best. I think if you were going to look at dramatically or artistically what film sort of holds up, Best of the Best is one of those. It's very melodramatic. Yes, you say you've got that brother element. It's quite a predictable tournament movie, I would say. But you do get to see Philip Ree and Simon Ree fighting together. To see their taekwondo skills on screen is really exciting. So I don't know. I love them both.
You got
to
vote.
I'm going to have to go with Mortal Kombat. I know it's a cheesy film, but it's one that's very close to my heart.
I'm going to give extra marks to movies that say the title of the movie in the movie. At the hour 4 mark of Best of the Best, James Earl Jones turned to the team and said that, you know, you guys are going to be the best of the best. High marks for that. And obviously Mortal Kombat is said multiple times in the movie.
So, oh, for sure. I think the movie starts off by yelling the name Mortal Kombat.
Yeah. and I'm pretty sure as we go along in this bracket, most of these movies will say the name. I just watched Best of the Best yesterday, and it immediately, like without remembering that it was going up against Mortal Kombat, was funny to me because the basis of these two movies almost the same. where
a bunch of Americans travel to the Asian motherland.
The main character in Best of the Best, his brother was killed by his opponent. In Mortal Kombat, Liu Kang's brother was killed by his opponent. So it was just kind of laughing. I thought that was really funny.
One thing to mention before you give your vote, Mortal Kombat is having a remake coming out next year, which as I was rewatching it for this bracket, struck me as so obvious because I really like Mortal Kombat, but it seems like a movie that could so deserve a remake, or I guess a relaunch, because the special effects that we can do now would, I think, really do justice to the story they're trying to tell.
There's, I want to say it's like a 17-minute long fan-made Mortal Kombat short that stars real actors. Like, I believe Michael Jai White is in it. And
it came out recently?
Like probably 6 years ago. And that was a push to try and get the franchise rebooted. But if you guys look that up, it is really good.
Which way are you
going
to go?
What I'll say about Best of the Best is it was a little cheesy. I grew up with Mortal Kombat and I really actually enjoyed it. I am going to let Mortal Kombat move on.
Before we say goodbye to Best of the Best, though, two things must be said. The first one is that I love the ice cream falling down plot point. There's a story that listeners can follow up with me another time to tell, but I had a teacher who used to use the metaphor of ice cream falling from your cone as like a defining life experience. How do you react to that? And in this movie, that is his defining memory, his ice cream falling from his cone as his brother was killed. So that was that I thought was sort of just bizarre. I think Best of the Best is just one long training montage. Like literally an hour of the movie is just people doing exercise in different ways. And I guess they just didn't know what to do to pass the time. But most importantly, why is Chris Penn so interesting? Nolan, this is to your credit.
Yeah, everyone pause the podcast, go look up Christopher Penn and come back and you'll realize that he is the love child of Alexander Chester and Akiva Wieneker.
Those are the hosts of our brother pod 32 Fans, which inspired our own podcast to exist. So yeah, Chris Penn was, as Nolan points out, a mashup of two of our favorite hosts.
Did it make any sense that he was wearing a cowboy hat even though he's from Florida?
His character was just completely bonkers. I mean, the movie as a whole, there's a great bashing review of this by Roger Ebert where he says, this movie is completely pointless. The only purpose of Best of the Best is a documentary of actors being bored. Let's look at the next matchup though. Number 5, Black Belt against number 10, A Knight's Tale.
Round 1, fight.
Now, Black Belt has a very sappy name. It came out in 2007, so it's somewhat recent, but it's actually quite a serious drama set in World War II about two Japanese karate students clashing with the Japanese military and the legacy of their master. And A Knight's Tale also came out in the last 20 years in 2001, and it can simply be described as the Rocky of jousting movies, though I think it might also be the only jousting movie ever made. It's loosely based upon a Chaucer short story, and it stars the super charismatic Heath Ledger. King Robert Baratheon and Paul Bettany steal the show.
Behold, my Lord Ulrich, the rock, the hard place. Like a wind from Geldland, he sweeps by, blown far from his homeland in search of glory and honor. We walk in the garden of his turbulence. For I have the pride, the privilege, nay, the pleasure of introducing to you a knight, sired by knights, a knight who can trace his lineage back beyond Charlemagne. I first met him atop a mountain near Jerusalem, praying to God, asking his forgiveness for the Saracen blood spilt by his sword. Next, he amazed me still further in Italy when he saved a fatherless beauty from the would-be ravishings of her dreadful Turkish uncle. In Greece, he spent a year in silence just to better understand the sound of a whisper. And so, without further gilding the lily, and with no more ado, I give to you the seeker of serenity, the protector of Italian virginity, the enforcer of our Lord God, the one, the only, Sir Ulrich von Liechtenstein!
And there's tons of rockers.
I remember absolutely loving Black Belt. I think it had a lot of depth to it. quite a layered movie. And also, I think it's actually, there's quite a few genuine karate masters actually cast in the film.
All the leads in Black Belt are played by the highest level karate masters. Yeah. There are no real actors. It's just all expert karate.
Feels quite authentic in that sense. So the fight scenes are very grounded, very realistic, but they're deeply rooted in the stylistic forms of karate. Out of the two films, I guess I would say Black Belt over A Knight's Tale.
So I actually just got finished with Black Belt just under the wire before we started here. And I will admit it is definitely a better movie. Tale's more fun. Also way too long. It's about 2 hours and 12 minutes.
2001, though, they didn't have TV the way they do today. Right. This would have been like a Game of Thrones competitor.
It's a lot of fun. I like how they implement modern day music. We Will Rock You playing, and then there's a dance scene where they're doing the old medieval dancing, and it turns into more modern dancing, almost like it's a musical.
Yes, I remember that.
So it's a different type of movie. Heath Ledger is a charisma machine. Black Belt, somber, serious drama. It was tough for me to find time to watch it because of it being subtitled. So you have to really pay attention, and you can't be doing stuff in the background. And you know what? I think I might actually give it to Black Belt, even though I do like A Knight's Tale more. Black Belt is the better film.
I am going to vote for A Knight's Tale. I think it's a much more enjoyable watch. Mm-hmm. I also don't think Black Belt... I think the best part of Black Belt is what Ben said, is the credibility. It really makes you feel the depth of the legacy of karate. It goes way too easy on the two leads in that they could have been so much more complex, and they're so simplistic. And I get the simplicity is part of the sort of black and white themes that the movie's trying to communicate. But the bad guy is so bad until the end, and the good guy is just so naive and innocent and simplistic. Easily made both characters more complex and more rich, and had a much better movie as a result. The movie's beautiful to look at, but it just could have been so much better, and it didn't go for it. This is something a lot of these movies worth paying attention to. The way the fights are filmed in Black Belt is way too many cuts. You can't appreciate the moves. And here we have expert karate guys going at each other. The camera work doesn't allow us to appreciate what they're doing, which I just don't understand. Without getting too much into spoilers, I don't understand why the bad guy karate student, what happens to him at the end? He's like, okay, I'm out. But Black Belt will advance, and it will advance against Mortal Kombat.
I think I gotta go with Mortal Kombat.
On the one hand, you've got quite a solemn movie, which is sort of deconstructing the meaning of, you know, karate and what does it mean to earn a black belt and so on and so forth. Then Mortal Kombat's just a load of crazy nonsense. If we're going for fun factor, go with Mortal Kombat as well, I think.
Mortal Kombat is in the tournament, has a low seed, and we will see who it faces off in the semis. Let's jump then to the bottom of the bracket. Number 3, Warrior, versus number 7, The Art of Self-Defense.
Round 2, fight.
Now, Will is trying to be polite and quiet, but if he doesn't jump out and speak his mind about at least one of these movies, I will be very disappointed. Warrior came out 10 years ago, almost in 2011. It's about two brothers, and in some sense, their father, all of them are at odds, and they're entered to win a big money MMA event. I think it's the only MMA entry into this bracket. It's directed by the same guy that made Miracle, another classic sports movie. And the cast are really at the top of their game. Tom Hardy, Joel Edgerton, and Nick Nolte.
You can trust me, I understand.
You spare me the compassion of father routine, Pop. The suit don't fit.
Tommy, I'm really trying here.
You're trying?
Yeah, I'm really trying.
Now? Where were you when it mattered? I needed this guy back when I was a kid. I don't need you now. You know, it's too late now. Everything has already happened. You and Brendan don't seem to understand that. Let me explain something to you, okay? The only thing that I have in common with Brendan Condon is that the pair of us, we have absolutely no use for you. Look at you. Yeah. I was right. I think I liked you better when you were a drunk. At least you had some balls there. Not like now, tiptoeing around as a beggar with your cup out. Take it somewhere else tonight. In fact, you know what? Here's a cup. Why don't you take this and go get yourself some more of your shitty tapes, and you go back to the room and you listen to some more fish stories that no one gives a shit about. And get out of here. Get the fuck out of here! Come on.
The Art of Self-Defense, of course, came out in the past year. It stars Jesse Eisenberg, I would say, as himself. He's playing a timid loser that enrolls in a cultish karate dojo to become a real man.
Ben, I want you to keep in mind that I'm a huge Warrior stan.
Even though you're not going to vote, give us your favorite thing about each of these movies.
I've never seen Warrior. I'm not sure I would consider The Art of Self-Defense really a sports movie.
It's about the practice of being part of the training of a karate dojo. So I certainly think it qualifies a day in the life. And I listened to Riley Stern, the director of Art of Self-Defense. I listened to a long interview he gave where he said adopting the practice of daily karate has changed his life. And this was sort of his way to take his most personal hobby and then also communicate a larger message at the same time. So I think it grapples a lot with those, a sport activity, and in a way that's fresh. And that, you know, as Ben was saying at the top, it doesn't have to thrust a tournament down on us, but it's still very much about the practice of adopting a sport, adopting a physical, quote unquote, masculine activity.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I can't argue with that. It's really just, it doesn't have like the direct competition aspects, I guess.
My ranking, without giving it away right off the top, is 84 and 85. So these are really neck and neck, totally different types of movies. Like the humor in Art of Self-Defense is just so subtle. And the way that the characters almost become, like you were saying, a cult, dialogue similar to that of the movie The Lobster, where people just don't talk that way. It was just making me smile the entire movie. And he's handing out the physical belts for your pants, and the sensei says, I love my black belt. Not only does it allow me to wear my level outside the dojo, but it also functions to keep up my pants.
I had it made. It's for everyday use with casual clothing. Obviously, I chose yellow because I'm a yellow belt. I wanted to wear my yellow belt all the time, but I knew it would look strange.
That really is a wonderful idea. To be honest, I wish I'd thought of it.
Now I could be a yellow belt in everyday life, in addition to being one in this dojo. I even had to make a black one for you. I think it turned out quite nice.
I don't know what to say. I'm honored.
Stuff like that is just so rich in a movie like this. And I had heard Will talk and praise about the movie, and I wasn't too interested in seeing it. And then as soon as I watched it, I was just smiling the whole time.
Every line in that movie, I was like, this is a Jesse Eisenberg movie to the T. That's what I mean. Like, he plays himself. Like, he plays the most quintessential Eisenbergian figure. Every line that every character in the movie says, I can imagine his character saying. Like, he could have played every role in that movie, and it would have been like the best version.
It's like he wrote it or something, but he didn't.
Yeah.
He was on a podcast I listened to, and he's just like Adam Driver. He doesn't watch himself in anything. He'd never seen Zombieland 1. And so when they went to film Zombieland 2, the director forced him to watch clips of himself so that he could maintain the same character. I honestly think that he's exactly like the character in Art of Self-Defense.
AKA in all of his movies. 84, 85, I'm... First off, amazed that you give such specific scoring to all the movies you see. That's impressive in its own right. Regardless of which one got the 85, in the all-important 32 fans martial arts sports bracket, which one of these gets the edge?
I got to give it to The Art of Self-Defense. Even though I teared up in Warrior multiple times, depending on where you are in your own personal life, you could be cheering for either brother, because neither brother is actually the bad guy, you know? Like, at first you think, okay, Tommy's a bad guy, and then you realize what actually happened to him and what he's fighting for. One nitpick about the movie, though, is there's no way that the government would ever let Tommy fight in that final fight, right? Like, when they just arrest him, they know exactly where he is.
Learned anything from our current president is that when the camera's on, you know, life just moves forward.
I did have one question for Ben, though, because both of the leads of Warrior are Brits. What did you think of their American accents? Being a Canadian myself, I thought they were good, but I don't know Pennsylvanian accents.
Tom Hardy can just do so different accents so well. He's incredible in that movie. Joel Edgerton as well. I think if you're looking at it purely from the purposes of purely martial arts, sports got to go with Warrior, probably, I'd say, out of the two films. It's not to say that The Art of Self-Defense, you know, any disservice there, because it's such a funny but dark, twisted film as well. That hits over there out of interest, The Art of Self-Defense, because it really snuck under the radar here, and it sort of landed on Blu-ray, and no, it didn't get a cinematic release. It didn't really get a wide release at all over here. So
it did not make an impression anywhere. Yeah. deserved more attention. Will and I have discussed it a lot on our podcast, and we have differences. I think a lot of the jokes don't really land. And,
it's a good commentary as well on that type of martial arts teaching. As much as it's not, a traditional martial arts film, those types of characters that the sensei portrays, that sort of mukdojo approach to teaching, definitely prevalent, I'd say, in the more commercial world of martial arts. So I think Riley Stearns does a really good job in, obviously, the sensei is a ludicrous figure at first, but then, you know, without giving the film away, there's a point halfway through where suddenly he reveals a much more sinister side. Such an original film as well. And you're right, it sort of exists in this strange alternate reality where everyone talks a bit weird, and
maybe there's almost a meta level where the whole movie, the whole story is sort of everyone speaking like Jesse Eisenberg's character, because it's almost as if like he's not imagining the whole thing, but it's all so much from his perspective. That's the reason they all sound like him. Like, they all speak in these like clipped weird tones.
Reminded me of Napoleon Dynamite a little bit. You know, the way that had that sort of clipped delivery, very dry. You either find that kind of humor funny or you don't. So I think there's people that will be really turned off by the art of self-defense. They just won't probably get it.
I see, but people totally hating the style of humor.
Your vote is going for Warrior, though. Is that
well,
fair?
I mean, I wound up at the end of Warrior. I've seen Warrior a few times. I think it's a very powerful movie. It's quite a predictable movie. I think you sort of know where the film is winding up. As soon as this tournament element comes in, you're like, okay, this probably the two brothers are probably going to fighting each other. Fine. Sorry, spoiler alert.
Sports movies, you always know pretty much the final face-off. It's never really concealed. You always know which two teams, which two competitors are going to end up facing off against each other. I think in the art of self-defense, you know from the first scene that the people who beat him up are going to be the people he encounters and engages in some context. There's only one way Warrior can end. It's not a spoiler to say the two brothers have to fight each other in the ring. It's difficult to spoil sports movies, except the outcome of perhaps of that face-off sometimes is a spoiler.
The Russian Koba is played by WWE wrestler Kurt Angle, who has won Olympic gold in wrestling, actual Greco-Roman, for Team USA. So I thought it was kind of funny that he actually wanted to portray
the Russian.
Yeah.
We are waiting for the vote of Mr. Ben. Is he going to go for Warrior or is he going to go to the art of self-defense?
I am going to go for Warrior.
I am the tiebreaker. Warrior is the Rocky of our time. The same way that Rocky was the defining sports movie for 30 years, I think Warrior is one of the most underappreciated movies. The new boxing is MMA, and therefore MMA is sort of the sport at hand. The reason Warrior is so good is because the themes, the emotions, and the acting. If Hardy, Edgerton, and Nolte wasn't hitting it out of the park, it would be a forgettable movie. And they are so good.
So you won't forgive me, but you forgave Pop.
No, he's just some old vet that I train with. You know, he means nothing to me. And what I hear, he means nothing to you either. You got balls talking about forgiveness.
That has nothing to do with forgiveness. I got children, man. I got a family to protect. Everything I do is for them. I forgave Pop. Just like I forgave you and Mom.
You forgave us?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised you made the tournament, Brennan. You got some stones, man.
I fell in love. What the hell was I supposed to do?
You were supposed to stick to the plan. You were supposed to come with us. Mom needed you. I needed you. You're my big brother. You bailed on me.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you stayed. Everything worked out for you. You leave, you get the opposite. Okay? You leave, you get to bury people.
You're not the only one that suffered, Tommy. I didn't even know she was sick. I never even got the chance to say goodbye to my old mother. You had no right to keep that from me. That was not your decision to make.
No way. You walk around with your pictures in your wallet, and you're all, I forgive you. I forgive Pop. I forgive everyone, but you know, you're full of shit.
This theme's about how being a school teacher and being a soldier in today's America, which remain true, don't deliver. And therefore you have to sort of lead to this go into the ring and, you know, go to this primordial place to prove yourself as a man. And ultimately, the revelation is that Hardy's character just needed his brother's character to communicate to him as a brother. And particularly, I think if you have a sibling and if you've ever had sort of sibling conflict, there's something very deep in Warrior which could have not worked. It could have easily not worked. And it doesn't work in so many hammy, particularly fighting movies. And it works so well in Warrior. I respect Art of Self-Defense more and more, particularly since what Nolan said now. It was a brutal first round matchup, really unfair. With that said, Will, welcome to the danger zone. I think you're going to step in as a lead judge.
Oh boy.
Nolan, you are still fully with us because we're going to jump to our next matchup, which is number 8, The Quest, versus number 9, Bloodsport.
Round 1, fight.
That can only mean one thing.
Claude Van Damme.
Claude Van Damme.
The muscles from Brussels.
The Quest came out in 1996. He directed The Quest, and of course he stars in it. And the movie is about a tournament taking place in Tibet in the 1920s. And the key element, I think, is that it fulfills every kind of fighting fanboy's wet dream, which is it shows off diverse fighting styles. That's kind of, I think, the promise of the movie. And Roger Moore completely steals the movie as a rakish con man.
What's your name, son?
Christopher Dubois.
Mine's Dobbs. Law Dobbs.
He's really fun. And it's going up against Bloodsport, which was the defining breakout movie of Van Damme's career. It came out 10 years before in 1988. It's based upon what was claimed to be a real story, but spoiler, is not a real story, about a tournament taking place in Hong Kong where a bunch of people come from around the world, similar to The Quest, and just beat the crap out of each other. Similar stories, similar lead.
Watching the back-to-back, it was kind of like deja vu. I feel like I just watched this because I watched Bloodsport first, followed by The Quest. I have to give it to Bloodsport, just given that did the same thing first.
Bloodsport's one of the I would have watched when I was far too young to be watching these movies. So it had a huge impact on me. And Van Damme in general is one of those sort of heroes of mine. I've followed his career ever since. Yeah, even as a kid trying to do the splits between the two chairs thing. Yeah, absolutely. That's not recommended. Do not try that at home. Very much a Bloodsport fanboy. You're seeing Van Damme very much in his prime. There's an interview that I saw recently with the film's director, and he spoke about the first edit of Bloodsport being just absolutely awful. First edit of the film was like, we cannot release this. This is so bad.
I thought you were going to say he just released the first edit of Bloodsport as The Quest.
Yeah, it's not... it's not a masterpiece by any stretch of the imagination, but as a calling card for Van Damme's skills, his acting may not quite be on point. Bolo Young as the villain, I mean, you can't get a better on-screen kung fu movie baddie than Bolo Young. I mean, he's, you know, stood up against Bruce Lee and Enter the Dragon, for God's sake. So, you know, he's the real deal. To defend The Quest, gets this opportunity to direct a movie. And what does he do? Well, he basically rehashes the two films that he was Bloodsport and Kickboxer. He's essentially done exactly the same film, but with a bigger budget. And, you know, he's managed to get Roger Moore in there. I do very much enjoy The Quest, but I've got to give it to Bloodsport out of those two.
I think the high point of Van Damme's acting career comes in The Quest when he puts clown makeup on and is asked to mime in 1920s New York City alleyways. Yeah, I thought
and that he doesn't was... he give money? He's sort of Fagin character, isn't he? Giving money to sort of poor
to little boys. And he's having children steal from gangsters with the surety that they will come and murder all of his children. Yeah, that was like very weird. Things I didn't quite get in The Quest, I don't know if you guys can clarify. Bloodsport is moving on. They have this tournament of nations. For some reason, the Tibetans holding this tournament care about nations. And they have Japan go up against Okinawa. Now, I had to go deep into Wikipedia to even know that Okinawa was ever an independent country. But in 1920s, it had been part of Japan for over 200 years. I also love how Africa is a country in The Quest. The Spanish fighter in The Quest, his clothing has the flag of Albania. And why? Because apparently he is Albanian and he refused to wear the Spanish flag on his clothing. And he was just like, I don't care if I'm from Spain in this movie, I'm representing Albania. Which is so dumb.
There's some pretty bad.
So their $35 million budget compared to the $2 million budget of Bloodsport. I'm just thinking, where did all the money go? Did it all go to Van Damme?
There's some cocaine. Great background scenes. I mean, they're just wandering. Yeah, there was cocaine was being done in a lot of different foreign locales in the quest. Another thing I hated in the quest, it has every single stereotype story structure in terms of how you bookend a movie. The old man telling the story, and then it throws in the book being written about the story, which you're now hearing in the movie.
Where did you learn to fight like that?
It was long ago.
Like Van Damme wasn't sure which one to go with, so he's like, let's just throw them all into the movie. The kid actor playing Van Damme as a child in the beginning of Bloodsport, is he supposed to be the worst child actor of all time?
You cannot get katana sword by stealing. You must earn it.
I wasn't going to steal it. You're not gonna call the cops?
Not if we make a deal.
What kind of a deal?
And is he like that in order to make Van Damme's acting seem better by comparison? Because he was so bad. You cannot direct someone to act that badly if you try.
He may be a relation of the producer or something, maybe. I'm not too sure.
Do you just want to give a shout out to a 2014 reality TV show called The Quest, which was insane, which is basically just like a bunch of people LARPing.
It's hard to download The Quest in today's day and age, the movie, because you get inundated with the TV show.
Exactly. Exactly.
Favorite thing of this 1996 directorial debut of Van Damme is that it inspired a modern day TV show.
I really liked a lot of the fight scenes. It was just nice seeing like all the different fighting styles.
The second half of the movie doesn't even try to have a drama or a narrative at that point.
There's no plot at that point.
Yeah, I like how the female roles in both of these two movies are exactly the same blonde. Both of them are just a blonde reporter who has no purpose in the movie. Then she becomes the love interest simply because why not?
She's a woman.
Yeah, and Van Damme has like no romantic appeal in either of these movies at all. Of course, he gets the girl. My favorite scene, I thought you were going to get this, Will, in The Quest, when the bad guy in The Quest, when he's having the big final fight off with Van Damme, he wipes the sweat off his eyebrows. He has this like one master swipe across his face and this giant slop of wet goes flying and it's in slow motion. And to me, that was inspired directing. I would say Van Damme should have been given another chance just for that.
You're going to say he should have been given an Oscar just for that.
No, it's just like this like hilarious slow-mo of the guy swiping. But he has like a very big brow, if you remember the Mongolian guy. Yeah. And GIFs would have existed back in the day. They would have made one for him. Number one seed, that of course is Enter the Dragon, came out in 1973. It's going up against Bloodsport.
Round two, fight.
Enter the Dragon, it's Bruce Lee's last and arguably greatest movie. We already spoke about what it is, which is a fighting tournament on an island to discover a drug kingpin. There's a black guy and a white guy who are friends with Bruce Lee. I think intentionally they were trying to have an Asian white guy and a black guy to sort of appeal to the maximum audience. And everyone has real martial arts skills who's in this movie. And there's just a who's who of martial arts legends throughout. Bolo Young from Bloodsport is in this movie as well, so it's an all Bolo Young bracket. And Sammo Hung, who we're going to see in Prodigal Son, he's also in Enter the Dragon. And of course, Jackie Chan pops up as well. That said, two classics that seem to have shaped Ben's life.
I know, this is my film education right here. The thing about Enter the Dragon is this is sort of the big bang when it comes to martial arts movies. So, you know, Bruce Lee comes along, doesn't make it in Hollywood, although he tries very much to make it in Hollywood. The bills are racking up. He gets accepted. He reluctantly says, okay, I'll do these cheap movies in Hong Kong. Always wanted that ticket back to America. That's always Bruce Lee's plan. And then finally he got it with this movie. So Enter the Dragon, you know, the mere title alone, and he had to fight tooth and nail to call the film Enter the Dragon. And there was loads of other different titles. Blood and Steel, I think, was one of the titles. That Hans Island was another title. He was, no, this is Enter the Dragon. This is my big movie. This is going to introduce me to the Hollywood mainstream audience and et cetera, et cetera. And then, of course, tragedy strikes 3 months before it comes out, he passes away. So you've got all of this stuff happening behind the scenes with Enter the Dragon. It's impossible to evaluate Enter the Dragon without, you know, this specter of the fact that this is Bruce Lee, not only at the height of his powers, but pretty much the final things that he ever filmed. Very last sequence that was filmed for Enter the Dragon is actually the very first sequence. The film originally started with this weird car chase idea. Bruce Lee said, no, you need to start on a real impactful fight scene. I'll get my friend Sammo Hung over. We'll just quickly do this scene. That opening sequence took a day to film.
What is the highest technique you hope to achieve?
To have no technique.
Very good. What are your thoughts when facing an opponent?
There is no opponent.
And why is that?
Because the word I does not exist.
So, continue.
A good fight should be like a small play, but played seriously. A good martial artist does not become tense, but ready. Not thinking, yet not dreaming. Ready for whatever may come. When the opponent expands, I contract. When he contracts, I expand. And when there is an opportunity, I do not hit. It hits all by itself.
That's Bruce Lee, the very final scenes that Bruce Lee filmed. It's a very enjoyable romp of a film.
It's up in 2020.
Probably see Enter the Dragon once a year, I'd say. I went to a special 35mm screening of this film here at a cinema, the Prince Charles Cinema here in London. My girlfriend hadn't seen Enter the Dragon before. She, obviously, in seeing it for the very first time, very much of its time, let's put it like that. It's a very 70s movie, but I still think that the magnetism of Bruce Lee and his star power and his charisma, bearing in mind he doesn't really say too much, there's not too many lines of dialogue here, but just his intensity and his power just absolutely radiates. Even today, there was a slew of Bruce Lee copycats when he died. Even when Jackie Chan started, they were trying to mold him into a new Bruce Lee. They're still making stories about Bruce Lee. There's Tarantino, absolutely. He was, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Resonance of this movie, I think, just on Hollywood, on action cinema, the fact that he was the first Chinese hero that made it in America, I think that is something that just can't be overlooked.
But with that said, you're going to vote for the white guy doing fake karate in Hong Kong?
So the winner is Bloodsport, yeah. Yeah. Bloodsport is a version of Enter the Dragon, and many of these sporting martial arts films are versions of Enter the Dragon in some regards. It sort of set the template for martial arts cinema.
You should cast your vote on which movie do you enjoy more, not necessarily which one is the bigger cultural influence.
Yeah, it would definitely be Enter the Dragon. Can't beat seeing Bruce Lee just take out all of Han's guards at the end. The way he moves, the fight scene with Han is fantastic.
I 100% agree. I watched Enter the Dragon for the first time. I'm sure.
I'm jealous.
Once again. I had no idea that it incorporated so many elements of the blaxploitation genre. So I was very surprised by that and very impressed by this movie. I thought it holds up very well in 2020. You can definitely see its influence within many other action movies, not just other kung fu or martial arts movies, just sports movies in general. Probably one of the best sports movies I've ever seen, at least.
Enter the Dragon, easy win. Number 4, The Prodigal Son versus number 6, Karate Kid.
Round 2, fight.
Prodigal Son came out in 1981, classic era of Hong Kong martial arts movies, kung fu movies, directed by the same Sammo Hung from Enter the Dragon. He also co-stars as the fatter of the two Wing Chun trainers. It's the story of a spoiled rich kid in 19th century China who, after earning a fake reputation as an expert kung fu, trains with two Wing Chun experts to become actually good.
Great! You made it look like a real fight!
What we paid for! Where's the cash?
Ah, yes.
Dead old. Damn near broke my back faking that fight.
That's your problem.
You Scrooge. This ain't enough for ointment.
You agreed the price first. Take it, or else I'll never use you again.
Calls himself the Kung Fu King. Truth of the matter is that people are paid to lose when they fight him.
Fake fighter.
The Karate Kid in 1980, the year before, really needs no introduction, but it's one of the defining 80 movies about a teenager overcoming daddy issues and bullies by waxing cars with an insanely memorable karate sensei.
You remember lesson about the balance?
Yeah.
a lesson not just karate only. Lesson for whole life. Understand?
You're the best friend I ever had.
You pretty okay to go find the balance. Banzai, Daniel-san!
Hey, Banzai!
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 And notably, The Karate Kid has exactly the same director as the original Rocky. Will, start us off. I assume you saw both these movies for the first time. Which one gets your vote?
No, so The Karate Kid I actually saw when I was like 10 years old. One of the few sports movies that I saw growing up. All the movies in the bracket, Karate Kid is the one that's most made its way into like the public consciousness, is still there. You know, wax on, wax off, Mr. Miyagi.
Cobra Kai. Like,
yeah, Cobra Kai. I watched The Prodigal Son for the first time for this bracket. Probably the most fun I've had watching any sports movie for this sports movie bracket series. But I think that's solely because I could only find the
dubbing.
English dub of The Prodigal Son. It was so badly dubbed.
Are you Lung Cheng, the best fighter?
Master!
That's me. Ha 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 ha! Not your lucky day. Get him! Run!
I guess maybe three people were doing all the characters' voices. I didn't look into this, but I'm going to say it as if it's true. None of their what they're saying matches the mouth movements at all. And it really added to the experience. I think I'm going to have to vote for The Karate Kid. I think it's very well acted, and it connected with people for a reason.
Prodigal Son seems to be some sort of lighthearted comedy-esque jaunt. And then midway through, it gets deadly serious when throats are getting sliced and diced left and right and blood is all over the place. And I was like, holy F, what just happened in this movie? I thought this was a comedy. Is that typical for the genre? Because I think this is somewhat representative of like 80s Chinese kung fu.
Definitely. And particularly to Hong Kong action cinema, I'd say that the tone of some of those movies can vary quite wildly. But specifically with Sammo's work, absolutely. There's can go from just a completely bizarre slapstick routine to the most, you know, to a rape scene to like the most awful violence you've ever seen. It takes some getting used to, I'd say. Having said that, The Prodigal Son, I would say, is up there with one of the best traditional kung fu films I think that you're going to see, particularly outside of the Shaw Brothers, Golden Harvest, which was the studio that Sammo was working for. He is also the choreographer and the director. This is sort of the, you know, the apex of his talent. There's so much to love about The Prodigal Son. It's a shame that you saw the dub. Although having said that, the first time I saw Prodigal Son had the most outrageous dubbing back.
It's all Cockney accents. It's just so bizarre.
Did you get the one that Lam Ching Ying's character, he plays because the female roles in Peking Opera, of course, played by men, gave Lam Ching Ying's dubbing voice a very
sort of camp voice.
Yeah, did you got that? We must have seen the same dub. Yeah,
I think we did see the same dub.
Yeah.
Camera choices in Prodigal Son were disappointing a bit in that one of the things I understand about the movie is there's no wire work. So everything you're seeing is pretty much people really doing this. And yet it's hard in Prodigal Son, and it's hard to follow sometimes. The camera sort of jumps around. It kind of zooms in weirdly at times. And particularly the final fight, I really just wanted to sit back and appreciate these two guys. Difficult to do so. Karate Kid has one move that we all remember, and that's all it really needs, the crane kick.
Yeah.
I mean, all four of us probably did the crane kick as kids, no?
Oh, yeah.
I won many a fight with the crane kick.
The key is you get up in the crane, and then everyone backs off. You don't ever actually do the kick.
Do you love for the Karate Kid, or it's too American for you?
Big Karate Kid fan growing up, absolutely. And it's influencing getting so many people to take up karate. I think probably after Enter the Dragon, it was probably the next big martial arts film, maybe the defining martial arts film of the 80s, I'd say. We're still waiting for another defining martial arts film. I don't know. we're waiting for that new big thing. But as you say, it's John Avildsen, the same director as Rocky. It follows that underdog trope that Rocky followed, just sort of more family-friendly, accessible version of Rocky, I would say, just substituting boxing for karate. Big fan of Cobra Kai as well. I think they've done a really good job of bringing it back.
Cobra Kai's really good.
Not having Pat Morita is no longer with us, so you haven't got Mr. Miyagi, but they deal with that very, very well, I think. I would still choose Prodigal Son just because fluid choreography, the way that Sammo uses the central performances of Yen Bu and Lam Ching Ying, who, like Sammo, all grew up in this world. They were all Peking opera trained. I love the fact that this conceit that Lun Jian, who is Yen Bu's character, is supposed to be this Wing Chun master, but, you know, all of his opponents are being paid off. So it's, you're in on the secret as an audience, and you're learning as Yen Bu's character realizes, you know, oh shit, I'm actually not very good at Kung Fu. And that only becomes apparent when obviously the troupe get slain, and then it becomes a sort of more of a revenge film. And a shout out to Frankie Chan, who plays the baddie. He's not really a baddie in this film.
His bodyguards are the bad guys, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, and then once they're sort of offed, it's like, well, we need to have a big fight at the end. So they kind of manufacture this big fight between Yen Bu and Frankie Chan, which is a great fight scene. But you do feel sorry for Frankie Chan when Yen Bu is just like punching him repeatedly in the head. You do feel sorry for him. But
what a jump from the Karate Kid and Black yeah. Belt before. I mean, that's yeah. I don't know enough about martial arts to say, but there's this ethos in karate that this is not training in order to hurt people. I mean, so much for the art of self-defense. This is just a practice. Black Belt, I really love the sensei. I wrote it down while watching the movie. The sensei in Black Belt, he says, you know, before he passes on in the beginning of the movie, point is not to defeat your enemy, because by defeating your enemy who is weaker than you, you just debase yourself. Once you've beaten him, you've clarified that he's weaker than you, and therefore to defeat someone weaker than you, what's the point? It was said very nicely in Black Belt, and Karate Kid says it in its own way, and obviously maybe Kung Fu has a different tradition because they have no problem beating the crap out of opponents.
But Prodigal Son sets up this motif where he's being trained quite differently by two different Wing Chun masters. So it's different ways of approaching the same style. So Sammo plays this sort of, you know, larger than life sort of character who is very much a win at all costs. I think there's a line in the film where, you know, Yen Bu goes to do this amazing kick and he just charges at him, throws him in midair. It's just a wonderful stunt, but it sort of underlines the fact that Bruce Lee's approach, wasn't it? He says, if I'm in a headlock, I'm just going to stand on the guy's toe. I'm going to put a finger in the eye. All tradition goes out the window as long as I win the fight. Yen Bu, his character, develops those traits that Sammo teaches him to then win the fight at the end.
That's on podcasting too.
Whatever works.
That's the best as well in terms of defeating an enemy weaker than you. The way it ends, he could have killed his brother's killer, but instead he lets him go because he knows that he's actually defeated him.
Comparing the ending of Warrior to Best of the Best in that, you know, Warrior, there's a sense that his opponent is now so injured that he could just easily beat him. And yet Best of the Best chooses, actually annoyed me in Best of the Best. He could have just like poked him with his pinky.
Yeah.
And I would have fallen down. Scored
1 point.
And then he would have got 1 point. The US would have won. And
the Street Fighter 2 strength challenge where you break bricks. I have a feeling like I wouldn't have won.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good point. If they would have been tied and they would have had to break bricks, that guy would have just like collapsed with his. We have a classic Final Four. All four of these have now made our 64 movie bracket, but Ben, please lead us to decide our overall champion, martial arts, because on the left side first, you and Will, Enter the Dragon versus the Karate Kid.
Enter the Dragon.
It's got to be Enter the Dragon.
Nolan and Ben, Mortal Kombat versus Warrior.
Warrior.
As much as I love Mortal Kombat, yeah, I've been Warriors. A great film, great movie.
Oh, come on. I guess that means Warrior gets to finish him.
Finish him!
Warrior does have the best display of fighting in the ring.
Fight choreographer J.J. Perry, who works with 8711 and Chan Stahelski, David Leitch, those guys, and Sam Hargrave as well, who went on to do Captain America, the fight scenes there, and then also is now directing as well. So Warrior does, behind the scenes, have a very good, very strong established fight team working behind the scenes. And you're absolutely right, the way that the whole film is shot in a sort of realistic documentary style, so that when you go in the ring, but because the whole film has followed that style, as soon as it goes in the ring, you know, it's very, very effective. And both of the actors in Warrior do such a fantastic job as well.
They both got the best walkout music, No Music and Beethoven, and Tommy has the best celebration, just immediately leaving the ring.
Just leaving straight away. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that.
I do think A Knight's Tale has the best entry music, but it's almost a music video. Our championship, Enter the Dragon versus Warrior. We're going to have the only deciding vote cast by you, Ben.
Final round, fight.
I'll go first. Warrior.
I saw Enter the Dragon and I haven't seen Warrior. I'm going to abstain.
Very noble.
I think I gotta go with Enter the Dragon. Just the line at the beginning of the movie where Bruce Lee says, "The style I strive to achieve is no style at all," just means so much, because that's my motto in life.
That is actually the motto of our podcast. The style we aim for is no style at all.
So I got to go with Enter the Dragon. I mean, it reminds me, and obviously this movie came out after, but Casino Royale, where it's actually kind of a spy movie with, you know, a competition element. So in Casino Royale, you get the poker game, and then Enter the Dragon, he's there for the martial arts competition, but he's really, you know, doing spy work.
Well, compared to Dr. No, but there's actually a lot of Casino Royale there as well. Bond was just such a dominant influence on action movies at the time that if Bruce Lee was trying to establish martial arts, it made sense to sort of mash up some of the popular spy movies at the time. Enter the Dragon, Warrior, two of your British folk heroes versus Bruce Lee.
I've got a lot of love for Warrior. As you say, some great central performances, great fight scenes, very emotive story. Big
hearing a butt. I'm Warrior. Hearing a butt coming.
But yeah, got to give it to Enter the Dragon. Absolutely. It's just a bona fide classic.
Wow. Well done.
Enter the Dragon, I think, is the best entry point. That gets you into Hong Kong movies in general. Definitely revisit Sammo's work. His fight choreography, I think, is up there with some of the best that's ever been captured. If you're going into Sammo's work as after The Prodigal Son, Prodigal Son was sort of, I guess, the apex of the traditional Chinese kung fu movie. Hong Kong and Sammo in particular then veered off more into the action comedy work, and then his work with Jackie Chan, of course, in the 80s, including Wheels on Meals, Project A, Dragons Forever. My God, there's just so many great...
Ben, thank you so much. Nolan, thank you so much. Where can listeners find you? Because they already know, if not how to pronounce our names, where they can track Will and myself down. But how about you guys?
You can find me on Twitter at nrossi with a Y. Same with on Letterboxd.
The website is kungfumovieguide.com, and we do a podcast as well. We're just on a bit of a mid-season break. Season 5 of the podcast should be landing at some point this year. We're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Go and check it out. And if you like a lot of these movies, quite a few of the people that been involved in some of these movies we talked about, from Bob Wall, who played O'Hara in Enter the Dragon, he's been on the podcast. Shannon Lee, who's Bruce Lee's daughter, has been on the podcast. Got Adkins, oh, wow. Mindy Kelly, who's the fight choreographer for The Art of Self-Defense, she was on the show. So quite a lot of the people involved in these films. And JJ Perry, who was the fight choreographer for Warrior.
We'll be back with our regular monthly episodes.
Thank you so much for inviting me.